This is 89.9 WWNM. Yes, we're headed for another art-filled week. Are you making plans or do you need some ideas? Well, you've come to the right place. Whether you're in the mood for a music and dance extravaganza, a rarely performed work by Tennessee Williams, or an iconic holiday ballet, it's all in the mixed media. Come along as we go inside the arts. Hi, I'm your host, Diane Mack. It's billed as a party that happens once every 300 years. The Lula Elzy New Orleans Dance Theater will close out the city's year-long tricentennial celebration with a music and dance extravaganza called It's All About New Orleans. More than two dozen musicians and dancers will be on hand for this special concert honoring Jermaine Basil, New Orleans' First Lady of Jazz, and jazz master Ellis Marsalis. And will feature a performance of Duke Ellington's New Orleans Suite. It is an honor and a pleasure to welcome renowned jazz pianist, composer, and educator Ellis Marsalis to the program.
Thank you, Diane. It's been a minute, so to speak.
You and vocalist Jermaine Basil are both in your 80s and going strong. You continue to wow audiences with your musical gifts. What's your secret?
I never really thought a lot about it. But I do think it's important for people who expect to be on the planet for a while to take care of yourself. I remember hearing a comment from a guy who had gotten to be 80 plus, and he said, if I had known I was going to live this long, I would have took better care of myself when I was young. Being able to play music means that I didn't have to necessarily face conventional retirement. I'm still playing. So however long that I'm blessed with the ability to do that, I'll just keep doing it.
You've been entertaining audiences for nearly 70 years. Tell us about some of the highlights of your career. When did your love of music, particularly jazz music, begin?
I'm really a radio kid. I listen to the radio a lot. A good bit of what became television shows on the three major networks was on radio. There was one station in New Orleans that really featured music. The call letters was WJBW. I would listen to the radio station as often as I could. By the time I got to high school, I started to hear jazz music. I don't remember the name of the show, but it was a jazz show that catered to what they call modern jazz. Dizzy Gillespie, Miles Davis, and Max Roach, all of those people. That really grabbed me. That was my beginning. And I did get a chance to hear Gillespie in the spring of 1949. He came through New Orleans with his band. Now, the Booker Washington Auditorium was the space for us living in a segregated city. So Duke Ellington would come sometimes once or twice a year on what they would call a southern tour. Louis Jordan would come. And there was a band leader named Buddy Johnson who had Arthur Prysock singing in his band. And they would come. And we would hear at least once or twice the latest of the jazz bands. They would come down the East Coast and hit New Orleans and then head for Houston. And from Houston, they were going up to California. So we would hear the bands of the day, so to speak, coming through the city. And smaller groups, too.
Now, was the piano your first instrument?
No. I was a clarinet player. I played in the school band. But about my sophomore year, I started listening to rhythm and blues locally. And I found out that rhythm and blues didn't have no clarinets in it. So I got my folks to get me a tenor saxophone. And I started learning those tenor saxophone solos and the latest rhythm and blues songs. And I also noticed that if you could do that, you could get girls to look at you playing those solos. It wasn't until Gilbert Academy, which is where I was in school at the time, closed in 1949. They sold the school to the Christian Brothers, which is now De La Salle. That was the year that I heard the Gillespie's band. And that really set me in the direction, just listening to Dizzy's band.
And you knew then that your passion for jazz would be your life's work?
Yeah. And the older I got, the more I was able to, so to speak, venture from the nest on my own. And I started to meet people in New Orleans that shared the same passion. Eventually, I was able to start playing with local musicians. We wasn't making much money, but then I was free, single, and disengaged. So I didn't need a lot of money. It was a very interesting time. I was still going back and forth with the tenor saxophone and the piano. There's a club called the Dewdrop Inn. Sometimes we had jobs there, and sometimes there was a Sunday afternoon jam session, and we would go and try our skills with some of the latest bebop stuff that we were learning. This particular Sunday, I was sitting in on piano, and I heard this tenor player, Nathaniel Paralon. And after I heard him, I went home, put my tenor in the case, and never took it out again. And I started moving more and more towards the piano. I stayed with that.
Yeah. Take us back in time to your first concert with vocalist Jermaine Basil. How did your paths cross?
A lot of young people was taking lessons at the Xavier University Junior School of Music. Now, the Sisters of the Blessed Sacrament had no particular fondness for jazz music. Jermaine was a bassist in the Junior School of Music Orchestra. And I didn't really know her at that time. But I think where we really spent a certain amount of time was at a club called Tyler's Beer Garden on Magazine Street, which is no longer. I had a trio, and Jermaine was singing. I think it was every Wednesday night. And we worked on a lot of things, had a lot of repertoire. And sporadically, I would play with Jermaine here and there. And the thing about Jermaine that was different from just about all of the rest of the people who were functioning as singers is that Jermaine had gone to school, studied music, and actually was able to transcend just local rhythm and blues stuff. She had developed the skills that it took to read the music, and she listened, and she could sing the standards. She knew those songs composed by George Gershwin and different Broadway composers. So we were able to do those songs.
And now, fast forward, you are performing together again in a once-in-a-lifetime celebration, closing out the city's tricentennial celebration. What can we look forward to?
We have such an expansive repertoire of songs. I'll just wait until we get to the sound check and say, Jermaine, what do you want to sing? Now, there is the New Orleans Suite, which is composed by Duke Ellington, commissioned by the Jazz and Heritage Festival. And a band of very good local musicians are going to be performing it. And Lula Elzy from Lula Elzy Dance Company is going to be dancing to the New Orleans Suite.
Now tell us more about the New Orleans Suite and the legends, the New Orleans legends that it honors.
One of them is Buddy Bolden. When it was recorded, Clark Terry was in Ellington's band, and he told me that he had a conversation with Duke. And he says, man, I don't know anything about Buddy Bolden. There's no records or anything. How am I going to play in reference to him? And Duke said, oh, man, you know the kind of person that Buddy Bolden was. He was very elegant type of person. And see, Duke Ellington had a way of explaining something in a very erudite and scholarly manner and heaping the praises on someone, even though you had never heard a recording of him. So that was the way he explained it to Clark Terry, who, being Clark Terry, did an admirable job. I would suggest that any of you within earshot who have not heard the New Orleans Suite by the Ellington Band, avail yourselves of that. It will give you an even greater appreciation if you plan to come to hear the Lula Elsie Dance Company and see them dance to the New Orleans Suite.
In addition to your legendary performances at the piano, what fascinates me about you is that four of your sons have garnered international musical acclaim, and you continue to give back, teaching younger generations of musicians. Why is it important for you to grow new seed?
Well, I think, to use the phrase that the late John Scott, fantastic visual artist and sculptor, said, it's our job to pass it on. And basically, as long as I'm in a position to do so, I feel obligated to pass it on.
Now, at this point in your career, is there anything, musically speaking, that you haven't done that you'd like to pursue?
I think I'm leaning heavily towards teaching this music at the Ellis Marsalis Center for Music and try to write some music.
That's beautiful. Jazz master, composer, and educator, Ellis Marsalis, thank you for spending time with me.
Oh, thank you for the invitation.
Save the date. The Lula Elzy New Orleans Dance Theater presents It's All About New Orleans, a music and dance extravaganza honoring jazz master Ellis Marsalis and New Orleans First Lady of Jazz, Tremaine Basel, Friday, December 28th at the Jefferson Performing Arts Center, 6400 Airline Drive, beginning at 8 p.m. More info at jeffersonpac.com. You're listening to Inside the Arts on 89.9 WWNO, New Orleans Public Radio. I'm Diane Mack. A cast of French Quarter characters and misadventures on a drunken Christmas Eve bring to life a Tennessee Williams holiday musical comedy. The Tennessee Williams Theater Company of New Orleans continues its run of The Mutilated, starring Margot Fanning and Tracy E. Collins, with an original score by local composer Michael Gillette. Margot, Tracy, and Michael are here with artistic director Augustin Carrero. We have a full house. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Hello.
Augustin, let's begin with you. This work is billed as a holiday comedy, but the title, The Mutilated, screams anything but. Can you explain?
When this play originated, it was double billed with another play under the title Slapstick Tragedy. And that's really what it is, because the situations are anything but comedic. The mutilation that's referred to in the play refers to a scar on one of the characters. But the characters are a lot like children, and they behave like children, and that makes for the comedy. It also takes place in the French Quarter on, like you said, a drunken Christmas Eve. And so that just sort of adds to the hilarious, zany exploits of these characters, because they're trapped on Christmas Eve in the French Quarter with no one but each other.
When did Tennessee Williams pen this work?
Fragments began appearing from the 1930s, but it didn't premiere until the 1960s.
And did he write it in New Orleans?
Some of the pieces were written in New Orleans, some in Key West, and some in New York. And that's why we have a few pieces where he mentions some New Orleans geography that's maybe a little bit off, because I don't think he was in the Quarter when he wrote those parts.
What was going on in the playwright's life when he penned this?
When he was putting the finishing touches and sewing it all up, he was going through a period where he was experiencing some critical failure and backlash. This was long after A Streetcar Named Desire and The Glass Menagerie and Cat on a Hot Tin Roof. And for a very long time, folks were saying, I want you to bring back the Blanches and the Maggies and these characters that have become archetypical of Tennessee Williams. So with this play, what he did was he sort of camped himself. So it has every element that you want in a Tennessee Williams play, only it's turned up to a 14 and smushed up against each other in 90 minutes of musical mayhem.
But this is quite different for Tennessee. It's a musical?
It is. He wrote the lyrics, and a composer put together the music for the original production. That music has long since been lost to the general public, and that's why it was important to us to make music afresh, and that's when we engaged Michael to put together the music to go along with Tennessee Williams' lyrics and book.
And Michael, how did you orchestrate this work?
Once I had an understanding of how his rhythm and meter worked, it was creating a palette to go along. So it's made up of some unusual instrument combinations. Contrabassoon and bass clarinet for some pungentness, harp and celeste to get the Christmas magic, and then a percussionist with a whole box of toys, ratchets and triangles and fishy scrapey things, and it's all quite a wonderful pastiche of quarter craziness.
Margot and Tracy, you are central characters, lovingly called frenemies in this holiday romp. Tell us the storyline and give us some insight into your characters.
This is Tracy, and I play Celeste, and I am friends with Trinket Dugan by, let's say, proximity. We both inhabit the same Fleabag hotel, but we come from very different backgrounds. I come from old New Orleans money, but I guess you could say I'm the black sheep of the family.
I'm Margot, and I play Trinket Dugan, who found herself in the French Quarter when she tried to make it in public relations. She left her family in Texas to pursue a career and soon found out it's not that easy to do in a city like New Orleans, where it rains a lot. And I'll just leave it at that.
Is there a scene you can share with us?
We have a couple of wonderful cat fights, if you will. We'll let Augustin set the scene up.
Celeste has just been let out of jail on Christmas Eve, and she was picked up by her brother, who wants nothing to do with her, doesn't want her coming over to Christmas dinner, so he dumps her at this hotel that she had been staying in. But she's so embarrassed that she was in jail, she doesn't want to go in through the main lobby. So she wants to go up through Trinket's room so that she can pull herself together. And this is the first time Trinket and Celeste have heard from each other since a big fight that they had that ultimately put Celeste on the spiral leading to her being put in jail.
Who's knocking at my door?
Me, Celeste. Let's bury the hatchet for Christmas.
We can't bury the hatchet. We hit each other too hard, and now it's too late to forget it.
Think of the wonderful times we had together.
They weren't wonderful times. We bummed around town together. I took you to breakfast. I took you to lunch. I took you to dinner. I took you to the movies. In return for all those favors, I just got envy, resentment, and sly insinuations that if I didn't go on sucking up to you just for company in my time of despair, you'd give away my secrets.
That's not true. No soul knows about your mutilation but me.
You kept reminding me of it, that no soul knows about my mutilation except Celeste. Why would you do that if you didn't mean to threaten me with exposure?
People don't trust each other. I was afraid you'd suddenly get tired of me, bored with me. Trinket, let me in. I'm scared to pass through the lobby.
They've checked you out. You've lost your room here, Celeste.
That's what I was afraid of. I suspected. I see you're drinking Tokay. Let me in for a drink. It'll give me the courage to face my situation in the lobby.
Throughout the night, Celeste and Trinket move from the hotel lobby to the middle of Jackson Square into a somewhat crowded bar, and they see everyone from drag queens to panhandlers, friendly bartenders, and even drunken sailors. One of those sailors comes home with Trinket at one point, and that doesn't go so well. And there's also Bernie, who is a central character to the play. He is the guy who works the desk at the hotel nights, and he always has something to say to Trinket or to Celeste.
Is there a holiday message that rings out as we embrace the season?
I think that this play is a lot about forgiveness. People are there for each other at the end of the night.
Hang on to your friends.
Friendship was rolling through my mind, too. It's important. Friends can be family if you don't have any family otherwise.
Life is absurd. People are absurd. We put ourselves in absurd situations, and in the end, we have each other.
Actresses Margot Fanning and Tracy Collins, composer Michael Gillette, and artistic director Augustin Guerrero. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks for having us.
The Tennessee Williams Theater Company of New Orleans continues its run of a Tennessee Williams Christmas spectacular, The Mutilated, with performances running at Zeitgeist Multidisciplinary Arts Center, 1618 Aretha Castle Haley Boulevard, Thursday through Saturday, December 20th through 22nd. The Moscow Ballet's Great Russian Nutcracker is spreading Christmas cheer on stages across America. New Orleans is one of more than 150 cities on the company's Dove of Peace tour, spreading its message of cultural unity. Moscow Ballet audition director and dancer Yuri Kuzo joins us by phone. Hi.
Hello.
You have quite a touring schedule this holiday season. What are you looking forward to in New Orleans?
We are looking for kids who wants to express themselves on the stage in our beautiful and fabulous show, Moscow Ballet, Great Russian Nutcracker.
Now tell us about this unique ballet. Does it follow the traditional Nutcracker story and Tchaikovsky score?
Yes, absolutely, but we have some changes. Originally, we have the story of the Nutcracker as the princess and prince are traveling to the land of sweets. We have absolutely different land. We have a land of peace and harmony, and this is unique because no one has this land of peace and harmony. Actually, we have a huge influence from the Russian tradition, legends, and stories. We have traditional Santa Claus, as you call him. We call him Dead Moroz, his great-granddaughter, Snehurochka, or Snow Maiden. And they are traveling in the sleigh, Troika sleigh, to this land of peace and harmony, whereas the life-size dolls, puppets like Spanish, bull, Chinese, firebird, then French unicorn, the Arabian elephant, and the Russian bear. And they bring peace and harmony to each heart. And the idea of the whole show is to touch every heart in the audience. The art of Nutcracker helps to bring this and show this, especially in this Christmas time.
Now, there's no Sugar Plum Fairy and no land of sweets. You're saying that there's a land of peace and harmony. And in that land of peace and harmony, you have something very special in this show, the Dove of Peace?
Yes, it's a couple dancing with 2 10-foot wings. And when they are dancing together, they make a wing 20 feet. And this is very beautiful. There is a lot of acrobatic movements with the ballet, of course. And this is the dance I think is the most beautiful in the whole show. I love it.
And you have local children in this production?
Yes, in this production we have 43 local children cast from the Galvez Studio of Dance. And they will participate in parts like Party Kids, Mice, Snowflakes, Snow Maidens, Spanish, Chinese, French, Russian, and Arabian variation.
And how were they chosen?
We have 7 audition directors in our audition tour, and we show them specific movements from each variation, and we choose them, and then we rehearse with them and wait for the show.
So you have an audition process in every city?
Yes. 150 cities was spread out between us, and every one of us travel into a different part and teach the same choreography.
Is this a Russian ballet company based in the United States?
Yes.
Where are you based?
Massachusetts. All dancers are from Russia, Ukraine, Kazakhstan, from the old Soviet Union. It's Russian.
What is your ultimate wish for people around the globe this holiday season?
This holiday season, I wish that everyone sit around their friends and family and take care of them, say them thank you, and understood that there is no way than peace. We have to understand that we have to love each other and trying to do good things every moment when we have a chance to do this. This is time for peace and harmony, and this is the best way to visit our show and understood this, because we bring this feeling to each heart, to every heart.
Cultural unity is something that's very important to your company.
Yes, very important.
Moscow Ballet audition director and dancer Yuri Kuzo. Thanks so much and happy holidays.
Thank you very much. Happy holidays.
The Moscow Ballet's Great Russian Nutcracker is coming to the Sanger Theater on Wednesday, December 26th for 2 performances, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. More info is online at sangernola.com. That's our show for this week. Major support for Inside the Arts comes from the Hellas Foundation. Additional support comes from Christwood Retirement Community, the Contemporary Arts Center, and the New Orleans Opera Association. Our program is a production of WWNO and is archived at WWNO.org. Wishing you and your family a safe and happy holiday season. I'll be back on New Year's Day at 1 p.m. with more ideas for your artistic palette when we'll go Inside the Arts. I'm Diane Mack.